by all means.
You want to turn us on? Great. Hold it up. I'll call the meeting to order. This is the Lesage Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council meeting, December 11th. Thank you all for being here. Scott, I know you're on the phone. Rick, are you on with us? Rick is planning on joining us. He's at a meeting in Washington, D.C. So we have two on the phone. We've had some feedback that it's hard if you're on the phone to hear everyone, so speak into your microphone if you need to speak so that they can hear well. Scott had something come up later on, so he could not give us the week's notice to be able to actually participate in the voting, but he can participate in our discussions. So thanks, Scott, for participating from afar. Rick did give appropriate notice so he can vote, and we need Rick on the phone later as we get to approving our draft bill along with Ron Shira, who is planning on being here, because we need 9 votes. First on the agenda is just to review and approve the agenda as it is in front of you. Is there a motion to do that?
So moved.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? We don't have Rick on the call, so we can do a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next is to review and approve the minutes from our last meeting. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Bob. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Any conflicts of interest that anyone wants to report on that have not been previously acknowledged with regard to anything on today's agenda, which includes all of the recommendations that we're working towards passing into our appropriation language? Appears there are none. Executive Director's Report. Mark, welcome to your first meeting in charge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Council members, just a few things for you. First of all, in your packets, you'll see another schedule of meetings for 2015 for the Council. Again, this is a work in progress, not for ratification until next year with the new Council. But there are a couple of changes I'd like to call your attention to. First of all, in January, you'll see that the January meeting has been moved back. It's now January 30th, so it'll actually cover January and February. Another is that in September, the meeting was moved forward to the first week of September. So it keeps away from the Labor Day weekend, and also Senator Sachs, I get a request that we move it forward or back anytime, but other than what it was. Representative Hansen did mention, too, that it does put us into the state fair, so he said maybe you all have an excuse to come and attend the state fair. The November, also there is a change, and that is that we moved the meeting forward to the first week of November so that it is prior to the firearms deer hunting opener. Also, thankfully, give staff a little bit more time before the Thanksgiving holiday and stuff to work on the bill. So, and that, I believe, were the only changes to the...
There is one other change, which is we had a February meeting scheduled. But since the main purpose of that meeting is to review anything going on in the legislature and very little happens in the first month, it seemed kind of silly moving the January meeting back a week to get together in February to talk about what wasn't happening yet. So if something truly interesting happens, we can always call a meeting at the last moment. But the tentative schedule did have a February meeting, and we've dropped that at this point. Anyone have any comments on the proposed changes? All of this is subject to ratification of whomever the council is in January. All right? Sorry, you know.
No problem.
I wanted to point that out, so if anyone had it on the schedule in February, they didn't show up.
Mr. Chair.
Yep. January 30th and then March 13th.
A couple of things for you, just from a standpoint, just an update quick from staff on final reports that November or the December 1st deadline resulted in a real flush of reports that came in, creating a temporary backlog that are being processed. Just to let you know, it was just a minority of reports that come back with inadequacies, and the staff is working with project managers for corrections and finalization. Along that same line, at the November meeting, Councilman Rawl had urged the staff to devise a comparison matrix or something of that nature to directly compare the changes in appropriation or changes in accomplishment plans with respect to the appropriation changes made by the council. That didn't show a lot of that tool has been made. It doesn't show a lot of other changes other than what we're already ferreted out. But it's a great tool that can be used in the future. So that it was a good suggestion, and it will save time for staff in the future. Another thing that has come up or that was evident in those reports coming through was the notice of funding restrictions, the NOFRs that are to be put on each parcel as they are purchased and registered. We have under state law 97.8.056 in subdivision 15, it directs that parcels that are purchased with Upper Heritage funds must be separately recorded with a notice of funding restrictions, or what we call a NOFR. You're all pretty well familiar with that, I believe. But in essence, the NOFR states that the property is to be managed in accordance with the grant agreement, that it's not to be sold, transferred, pledged, or otherwise disposed of or further encumbered without prior written approval of this council. And it further directs that if those are violated, then the land reverts to state ownership. Recently, the staff, in becoming aware of those NOFR problems, what it was that basically some incorrect NOFR language was used for the parcels. So staff, again, is working with those project managers to get that corrected, working with DNR and so on, to not just correct, but also ensure that future NOFRs are filed correctly with the statutorily directed language. I have just two other very little things. First of all, I'd like to personally thank you for the well wishes that you all have provided, and I want to thank the staff too, because let you know they're wonderful to work with. They're talented. They're very capable, and I'm honored to be working with them and with you all. Speaking of staff, Amanda has something coming up. She probably hasn't told anybody, but we're going to mention it because I think it deserves mentioning. She's our commission assistant. Tonight, after this, she's going to be heading to the U of M to present her capstone for her master's degree in natural research or in biological sciences, pardon me. So good luck and congratulations to her.
Great. Any questions for Mark on anything? If not, we'll move right into item number 5, which is an amendment regarding the aquatic invasive species. And Don is here.
My name is Don Hickman. I'm the Vice President of Community and Economic Development with the Initiative Foundation based in Little Falls, the project manager for the project you approved last spring to evaluate the effectiveness for prevention activities associated with aquatic invasive species. Do I yield the floor to you?
You go right ahead.
Very good. Thank you, Chairman, members of the council, and staff for having me back. I'm here today to explore your openness to some amendments in our work plan and budget. I suspect most of them are almost routine. Some of it is housekeeping. I had listed my colleague John Sumption as staff, and he's a contractor, so we're moving that. Some of it's just improving the clarity of language, or as we've begun the program and are more clear on specific costs, I tried to be more explicit in the budget so you know exactly what we're investing in. There are a few changes that I wanted to be sure that you're tracking on and supportive of. One of the unexpected developments last spring was the allocation of $10 million by the legislature in aid to counties interested in management or treatment of AIS. Most counties have been thrilled by this largesse. Some didn't know how to manage it. And we've had a surprising number of calls from counties saying, we don't know what good prevention activities look like. Can you help us? And our response to that was to partner with the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates to prepare a summit that will hold next month in St. Cloud. In this coop, I left a fat envelope at your spot there with the draft agenda. And they're on the table here. If any commission members would like a copy of that draft agenda, staff has offered to register up to 6 of you. We'd love to have you in attendance. In fact, if you're planning to come, make sure I know so I can recognize you. We are bringing in expertise from Minnesota, from the upper Midwest, and even nationwide. We may even ultimately Skype in some national researchers, scientists, or managers with expertise in AIS prevention. We essentially have two goals, is to hold up what is most effective in terms of prevention, in terms of cost effectiveness, what's the best action anywhere, but also to create a forum in which people can find their peers and explore opportunities to collaborate or share costs, somehow be more effective in both the practice and paying for good AIS prevention. We believe the summit will be cost neutral. We have found generous sponsors and vendors to help underwrite it, so it's really not going to have any impact on the grant dollars that you will support for projects, but we are calling it a project associated with this. Our subplot is we believe we'll get better proposals from project proponents in the aftermath of that conference. And we do anticipate at least 2 more rounds of project funding, one in midwinter this year and one next fall, and that would benefit from this gathering. So that's one of the changes. A second change is clearly the primary goal for this project at the end of the day is to raise innovative strategies that truly evaluate rigorously the impact they have for preventing AIS. Some projects may not work, but we need to document that and know that you don't want to invest in that again. Others will work well. We want to be sure and share that message, but have proof that it wasn't just an appearance of being effective. We talked to DNR about who they trust and respect to give really rigorous evaluation of these projects, and ultimately settled on a Dr. May Davenport. She is with the University of Minnesota Forestry Department, an expert in evaluation, and has actually worked in evaluating AIS prevention programs in other states. So the conversation is we would retain her to develop a template of evaluation, something every project proponent will have to adhere to, because the projects are frankly very diverse. From targeting millennial and young people to enhanced tracking or profiling of boats so that we know if they've been just on one lake or traveling to contaminated lakes. How do you compare those apples and oranges? Dr. Davenport's going to help us navigate that and be sure we can come back to you with a rigorous report about what worked and what didn't. The other change that is the one I expect you to want have questions for me on is we received 18 inquiries to our original round of funding opportunity in September. It's actually pretty amazing since they had less than 60 days to prepare those. They requested about $3 million of the roughly 4 that you have approved for awarding. The interesting part was, and I should have known better, in our promotional language, we talked about that we could, for the right project, we would match as much as 90 to 10, as long as cumulatively we were giving dollar for dollar match. Well, wouldn't you know it, every project proponent was pretty sure they qualified for that 90 to 10% match. And so we have gone back to them and said, if you were to do 50-50, does that affect your scale or scope? And some have had to withdraw because they said we cannot do 50-50. And others have said, would you raise the conversation with the council as to how this would work for a more generous match? And to confound the conversation, The legislature approved this $10 million last spring. My interpretation, my understanding is that state funds, but it's non-Lasard SAMS funds. How does that fit into the match equation? So the amendment we're offering you today would say that Lasard SAMS funds could be up to 60% match. Non-Lasard SAMS state funds could be up to 20% match, and the remaining 20 must be local. That's my summary of what we're here to present, and I'll take questions on any element, whatever.
Thank you. Other questions? Jim?
Yes, I'm curious. Thanks, David. I'm curious why Dr. Sorensen isn't part of this summit process. I mean, here we've been funding him, and he's supposed to be the expert in the state, and he's not even part of the program.
He's a key member of the program, just not the design team. He's a key speaker on the agenda, and he's also one of the on the review panel looking at every project that comes before us. So, per your instruction, he's an integral part of nearly everything we're doing.
Thank you.
Of course. I would be remiss if we didn't include him.
Other questions? Elizabeth?
On the match,
yes,
the local match, can that include in-kind services, volunteer services, such like that?
Absolutely. And, of course, Lasard SAMS prohibits your funds being used for valuation. So between in-kind, local fundraising, and evaluation expenses that must be borne locally, we're expecting that would represent the 20% match.
This is Representative Hansen. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Rick, thanks for joining us.
Do you need a motion to put the amendment on the floor?
Be happy to have a motion to put the amendment on the floor if that's what you wish to do.
I would move it to bring it before the council.
Great, thank you. Other discussion? I saw, Ron, you were...
Just curious about something. It's come to my attention that when the subject is zebra mussels, we really have no evidence of how zebra mussels are being transported from lake to lake. Outside of it looks like it's human activity. Are there any plans, or some of the $10 million from the legislature? Are we going to explore this? Because otherwise, I mean, the fact that zebra mussels got into Christmas Lake shocked everybody. Nobody took greater pains to keep those out. Yet they are there. Can you add any light to that?
A bit, and it's. I'm going to basically have you promise you I'll continue to return to that question over time. Don't forget that I am restricted to prevent us from supporting research. That were to evaluate effectiveness of projects, but I must say some of the projects are looking at the pathways of transmission. For example, we have one that will send boats through a decontamination process according to standard protocol and then do a very thorough inspection of whether that effectively identified or removed all zebra mussels. And if it doesn't, clearly, we're going to need to make adjustments. We haven't funded any of these yet. They're all waiting to hear your decision today before they submit their final budget. We'd originally planned to make those awards last week. But that's one example of how we'd be looking more rigorously at what boats and how we treat boats are likely to help or hinder the prevention of spread. Again, if I'm honest, these are the projects that were ready to go on less than 60 days' notice. I frankly expect more innovative ideas in the second and third round, but they've had time to think now that they know there's a funding stream.
Will the University of Minnesota Center be involved in this kind of research, testing boats and testing the water in the boats and if it's containing zebra mussels?
Again, Dr. Davenport from Forestry would be the evaluator. Dr. Sorensen, who's the former head of the research center, is on our review committee, so he would add his critique of whether this is good science. And Dr. McCarthy, who's the zebra mussel expert, is on call anytime that expertise is needed, so absolutely.
Other Jane?
Thank you. Just so I'm clear on the amendments, the total cost is not changing, but the match is changing.
Correct. So our average would be less.
The match was 50-50.
Correct.
So now it's 60-40.
Correct.
And what's the logic there?
That, in essence, the goal here is to make sure cost isn't the barrier to good projects or innovation. That we are having groups tell us that they cannot proceed at scale if they need to come up with 50% match. If you're a local unit of government and wasn't anticipating this opportunity, you can't come up with that money on short notice. My colleague Jeff Forrester from Minnesota Lakes and Rivers Advocates is here, and he was telling me that he believes many of the private the nonprofit groups have kind of maxed out fundraising right now. So we're exploring whether you're open to widening who we could partner with.
Can I continue on this theme a little
Please.
Bit? The 20% non-state local project match is what we're talking about.
Actually, two adjustments, and thanks for asking.
Well, I mean, you're talking right now, your previous answer was regarding the local groups being able to come up with a bill.
So right now, in my current work plan, they're expected to come up with 50%.
Right, and so this is 20 and 20 from non-Outdoor Heritage.
Exactly.
Other monies that wouldn't be from those local units.
Correct.
Why couldn't we make it 20 and 30? Why couldn't it be 25 and 25 to preserve the integrity of what we all agreed on last year?
And that is absolutely your prerogative.
I mean, I'm sensitive to the local groups, certainly. That's a big deal. But so is the match and the commitment outside of this small pot of money that should not all be on the back of OHF. So I'd like to discuss that alternative to keep the integrity of the 50-50 match and also respect what the local groups evidently say they can live with, which is 20.
John, do you have any sense as to the effect of going from 20 to 30?
You know, it's going to vary by applicant. I must say, and I'm a grant maker full time, I like matching opportunities because it puts people's skin in the game and makes them more frugal. And in my role as the project manager here, I'm able to foster collaboration because people need to work together to get this done. In terms of whether increasing the local share of match would affect what we can support, I was just speaking to Jeff, and he said that local groups are pretty tapped out. That's not to say, but that still gives them the choice to either participate or not.
Right. Nobody's forcing this.
Yep.
It's a voluntary thing. And, you know, we spent a lot of time for 4 years that I've been on the council talking about the strategies and all of the necessary motions that everybody has to make outside of OHF to make a difference in aquatic invasives or terrestrial invasives. And I am not in favor of lowering that standard. We fought long and hard to get a 50-50, and I'm very much against winnowing that down and carving it away. I think the match is critical for us to continue to support it when it's not our primary responsibility.
Do you care, Jane, where the 50% comes from?
Yeah, I care. I'm most sensitive about, you know, the local groups being able to participate and put forth, you know, whatever ways they can match it. You know, that's why I think Betty's question about, you know, in-kind is reasonable. And maybe 25 is reasonable when you talk about in-kind. But I'm definitely against going from 50 to 60 from this council. From this council's recommendation to the legislature, I should say.
This is an accomplishment plan amendment, so it is our purview to change this.
Okay.
maybe a way around it would be to still require only 50% from OHF funds, and then the 20-20 leave those at 20 with a minimum of, that wherever they're getting that extra 10% from, they can decide. But then if they need to stay at the 20, they're not being required on a local level to go above that. And they just have to find that 10% somewhere else, and we just stop at 50.
I can look at that, sure.
I'm seeing some nods on that. Rick, would you be willing to take a friendly amendment to change your recommendation to a 50-50 match with as Jane, as Sue outlined?
Well, I'm having a hard time seeing the room, but I was just going to comment, you know, I'm willing to support what would pass the council. So if that's what the feeling is, just get a supportive motion to go of having the 50-50 but allowing partition within it, I would take that as friendly. I would just comment that, you know, I think we require only 10% match. We've had discussion over 6 years about that, to have folks having, quote, skin in the game for the CPL grants. So really, we were only talking about a 10% difference here, but I would like to get these grants going, and if that's what the feeling of the council is, I would take it as a friendly amendment.
Thank you.
So I think we have a motion to approve an amendment to this program with the revision that 50% is non LSOHC and a minimum of 20% local funding. And you feel you can get the work done?
I know we'll get the work done, and we'll have willing partners. When I do my first full cycle report to you, I'll report whether we excluded anybody as well.
Good.
And we can always have this conversation a year from now. But I'm comfortable that we'll support good projects.
All right.
Mr. Chair, this is Rick, just to ask a clarifying question. The 30% that could be provided, up to 30%, could be state funds through the property tax effort that was provided in the tax bill last year, correct?
Yeah. I think that's right, Rick.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments?
Just to make sure I'm clear, what I'm hearing you say is that it doesn't matter where the 30% comes from as long as it's not Lessard Sam's. Is that correct? Very good. So that's the amendment we'll work on.
All right. Any other comments? Would you do a roll call vote since Rick is on the line with us? This is the whole thing.
Bob Anderson?
Point of order, just to, so the language has now changed in Rick's motion to include what he has.
That's right.
50-50.
With Sue's clarification.
Thank you. I would vote yes.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Representative Rick Hansen?
Yes.
David Hartwell?
Yes.
Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Jane Kingston?
Yes.
Representative Denny McNamara, absent. Sue Olson?
Yes.
Scott Rawl on the phone, ineligible to vote. Senator Tom Saxhog, absent. Ron Shara?
Yes.
Elizabeth Wilkins?
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you, Don.
Thank you very much.
All right. Next on our list is item 6, a discussion of a request from the LCCMR. Susan Thornton.
Good afternoon, members. I'm Susan Thornton, the LCCMR, Legislative Citizen Commission, Minnesota Resources. Thank you for having me today. I first want to back up a little bit to Council Member Shara's inquiry about zebra mussels. and what work is being done on looking at the vectors of transport. And one of the activities at the AIS Center at the university, Dr. Mike McCarthy, that's one of his key focus things, is looking specifically at the vectors for transport of zebra mussels. So good news is somebody is working on that correctly. Council members, I'm here as a result of a commission action on November 19th at a recent meeting of the LCCMR. And I bring you greetings from them and an opportunity for a funding partnership. In your packet, there are two items, essentially. One is a PowerPoint presentation by Dr. Steve Pack and Dr. Mike Kilgore at the University of Minnesota that came in to present to us on valuation of conservation easements. So this was information to the commission. I'm providing this to you so that you also have that same background information that was provided to the members. And then also in your packet is a letter from the three co-chairs of the LCCMR, signed by two of them. Our third member, commission member Gibson, was out of the country, and I'm able to sign that letter. And in the what the commission did is, after much discussion on conservation easements, valuations, looking at potential assessments for that valuation, costs and benefits of easements, of which Outdoor Heritage Fund has a lot of investment in, the Environment and Natural Resources Fund, and bonding have a lot of investment in over the years, and we're seeing it as a continued and growing conservation tool. And so there was that discussion, and really looking at for the public expenditures taking place, regardless of what fund, and then what are the public benefits, those public and natural resource ecosystem services that are providing. And is there a matchup there? Is there an imbalance? Also knowing that different types of easements will perform different types, will provide different types of ecological services. After the presentation and that discussion, the LCCMR members decided to put forward in our funding recommendation package to the 2015 legislature an appropriation for $250,000 to the University of Minnesota to, and the language is attached here also, assess the effectiveness of existing conservation easements acquired through state expenditures at achieving their intended outcomes of public value and ecological benefits. After that work is done, actually develop a standardized, objective conservation easement valuation system to help guide those future investments. And the commission is requesting that the Outdoor Heritage Council give consideration in a funding partnership in matching this appropriation that's being recommended by the commission. So it said the current allocation from the commission this time is $250,000 for this effort, for the conservation evaluation, and it's 5% of what the commission is recommending in their upcoming 2015 legislative initiative or package for funding of conservation easements. So, council members, I'm here with the message from the commission to you, and they thought that there might be an interest here because your funding investment in conservation easements as a conservation tool is quite honestly at a much higher level than that from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. And so it would be an opportunity for both the commission and the council to work together. So, Mr. Chair, that's essentially my message to you from the commission.
All right. Questions? Comments? Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Your discussions on the LCCMR
I'm assuming you had a presentation, or the group, or the commission had a presentation from the University of Minnesota. Can you break that down a little bit as to what area the University of Minnesota is requesting these funds, or where would these funds be spent? And my other question, follow-up question, Mr. Chair, would be, I'm just guessing here that the DNR might have, over the years, done their own study and their own planning and their own workup of the benefits of easements, conservation easements in the state of Minnesota. So is there not some of these things sitting around? I'm sure these questions were asked at your commission meeting. Have you got any little insight on any of this being done before at all?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, and members, multiple questions. Drs. Taft and Kilgore were invited in to give us background and give us some ideas. They did not come forth with a proposal. This is a commission initiative, and staff was directed to work with both of them on potential options for accomplishing this development of this future valuation system based on really new and emerging work on determining costs and benefits of ecological services being provided, whether it's on water quality and so forth. And then we've also funded in the past through Bowser to help increase what they call their conservation estimator to add some additional estimators to that. So that type of work can enter into it. Dr. Taft is an agricultural economist, and Dr. Kilgore, I consider him a forestry economist amongst other attributes that he brings. So I believe the department within the university is all under what's called CFANS, which the current dean is Brian Burr. And that's also where the AIS Center is, the TIS Center is, the Terrestrial Invasive Species Center. Sorry, I broke down into that window.
So just to follow up, Mr. Chair, thank you. So there has not been any work done in this regard. And looking at the presentation by Dr. Kilgore and the other gentleman here on page 2, they're going to review the different rights, different evaluation approaches, averages versus appraisal, different tax implications. Not that long ago, I know the legislature spent a considerable amount of money on the TILT program. I mean, we have a thick document just most recently put out with that, talking about different purchase prices. What I'm wondering is, you know, we're spending these dollars on obtaining this information when we know that purchase prices are going to be different. We already know that the tax implications are going to be different based upon the difference of purchasing prices. I'm just wondering if this is going to be something that Lessard Sams would be, if it's really in our purview, versus I know where you guys come from. You do mostly science and research and this type of thing. So I'm just not sure that this is a fit. And furthermore, I think maybe we probably wouldn't have to look too far to find this stuff out. What are your thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I moved too fast in the middle of the movie here. The first two pages of slides were background and a presentation of a study that had been done previously by Drs. Kilgore and Dr. Taft. And I believe a version of this was presented to the Outdoor Heritage Council sometime within the last several months. So you're correct. That was previous work. Again, our intent of our conservation easement session before the commission was to provide background and then also to sort of future it. Talk about in the discussion of what they were sort of tentatively calling the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm not saying there's any ugly about it, but really to lay some ideas on the table. And there have been quite a few discussions and looking at the various easement programs and really looking at what are the true costs of the public investment into those easements, and can we pull out what the ecological benefits promised, whether they are meeting those ecological benefits or potentially they're not. And also there was a lot of discussion about really recognizing with easements as a tool, an increasing tool, that we have the long-term monitoring costs also. And a lot of the evaluation has not accounted for really the upfront costs and the long-term costs of the management of conservation easements.
So I just comment on that particular thing, because when we do easements with nonprofits, they get money for long-term stewardship and enforcement. The state doesn't. And so there is an example of what long-term costs are. The state just chooses not to do it. The other thing I would tell you, and it's a burr on my saddle, frankly, the state has, in its infinite wisdom, decided to tell Bowser to use assessed values instead of appraised values. And in most cases, we are overpaying for easements because of that law. Because if you did an actual appraisal, you'd discover something very different. And I'm a huge proponent and hope that we see a proposal from some groups to go in and buy this land and resell it subject to a conservation easement, using the funds that they get to buy more land and resell it subject to a conservation easement, and determine what fair market value really is instead of paying a percentage that's fixed by the legislature. Because we are getting taken advantage of with those fixed percentages, I would almost guarantee you. Jane?
There are a couple of comments that I'd like to add to what you're saying. You know, we talk about easements almost in every meeting that we have. And certainly they're a very valuable tool. I'm not going to repeat what David said, other than I'd be a lot more inclined to work on getting some kind of brackets around assessments or appraisals to not either go over or under by a certain percentage, so that nobody is getting screwed, you know, the landowner or the buyer or whoever's funding it, the state. I'd much rather see some practical application on the law to bracket how much over or under an appraisal and an actual purchase price might be, because everybody knows the fair market value is only what it is on that one day and what a buyer is going to spend. So, you know, that's my opinion on financing those sorts of transactions. But in regard to funding a project like this, no matter how little or how much it is, it is not constitutional according to Article 11, and so I cannot support trying to make the OHF funds do the same thing that LCC MR funds do or any other fund. This OHF money is distinctly different, and it needs to be maintained that way, and we all have to be vigilant in making sure that it isn't eroded. So I can't support this proposal. Thank you.
Heather?
Mr. Chair, members of the Council, just one correction. State agencies do request and receive money for easement stewardship and monitoring. The only entity that doesn't is the federal government.
But it's not, it's for 5 or 20 years, most cases. It's not permanent funding set up in a restricted fund.
These are funds that have appropriated through the Outdoor Heritage Fund that are put into a separate fund for long-term monitoring.
But all of the proposals we've seen have not been for permanence. They've been for a period of time versus permanent, if my memory's right.
That's, I don't believe that's true.
Okay, I stand corrected. Jim?
Thanks, David. Susan, I just have a couple questions. It says you're going to study the effectiveness of existing conservation easements. So is that specific programs that we've already funded? Is that what you're talking about here?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cox, yes, you got to take a look backwards in order to develop a transparent system looking forward. And so it would, and as you know, there's a variety of easement programs, whether they're the forest conservation easements, the RIM WRP, there's the various easements that different NGOs also spend state dollars on. So really, if they're trying to, they'll be trying to tease out what were the expected conservation benefits, and did we get those conservation benefits as a result?
Okay, but a RIM WRP is going away. So, I mean, I guess my question would be, what difference does that make now? I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. And the other comment I make is, I mean, we've asked people have come here with easements to make changes many, many times. And most of these easements are law. I mean, there's no changing them. It is what it is. So I guess my question is, if you didn't get the ecological benefits or you didn't get whatever you wanted, what's your recourse? Is there a recourse? And the other thing I would say is, I mean, I've seen many, many RIM WRP easements, and some of them are so terrible you can hardly look at them, and other ones are like a dream come true. So there's a wide range of results, even within the same easement. And again, if you're not getting the benefits that you wanted, there's almost no chance of making any changes to those easements to change the outcome. So I guess the question is, what are you going to accomplish by this tool that you're going to have once you paid for it?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cox, I think you made my point for me, which is, and maybe I use RIM WRP as the wrong example, and it's not set. We're working with them on a work plan. This would be your opportunity on your, we have a work plan slash accomplishment plan on this. This would be your opportunity to participate in that. But by looking backwards, it helps you pull out the good things and keep doing them, and it helps you to keep from making the past mistakes as you're making future investments. So this is really about future investments.
Oh, okay, so excuse me. One more question. So if we had issues on, say, RIM WRP was still in existence, and we had issues about it, okay, so then how would we make these changes going forward?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cox, that would be up to you and those proposing those easements. Give you more information.
So I've got the information. I want to make the change. I say, RIM WRP, you're not giving us this ecological outcome. Okay, how do I make the change to get what I want?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cox, I think those are some of the things that as this is further discussed and as you have this tool potentially as developed, that you would be asking those questions, because it's not, you want to have something that's usable. The goal here is that you have a future valuation system that aids you in doing exactly what you're asking for.
Okay, thank you.
I'm not sure that having a tool that reinforces our belief that some of these easements are valued incorrectly is going to be any good at all for anybody, as long as we're still restricted by statute. I think your request needs to be going somewhere else, and that's to change the processes and the statute that govern how we pay for easements, not to throw $500,000 into a tool that tells us what we already know.
Here's what I know, or what I think I know. Something has to be done with our easement programs. And I was in total shock to discover at our last meeting that we were paying a heck of a lot more for an easement than we would have paid if we had bought the land. I mean, that is preposterous. But I also agree with Jane that this idea may be out of the realm of what we're for. On the other hand, I think what you're proposing in one form or another we need our legislative members here to step up and take a look at this again, because I don't think John Q. Public is getting its money's worth here in whatever way you want to measure it for sure. He's not. If we're paying more for an easement than we would have paid if we'd have just bought the damn land. So that has to change.
And just as a follow-up, Ron, to that, I did hear that the specific example that we talked about at our last meeting, the decision was to not do an easement and to purchase the land, and that's the way that's going because of our questions. And I think we can thank our staff for having the intelligence to force DNR to come and explain it, because they couldn't do a very good job and they discovered it wasn't a good deal. So we, our staff and our actions accomplished something. But you're right, long term, you know, what's wrong fundamentally about how the state is doing this work is a question that you know, frankly, if we don't like the way they do it when they come to us, maybe it's time for us to say, then we're not going to give you money, period, even though that's the way the state says to do it. We can't justify doing it, and that's a tough call for us to make, but maybe that's what we have to do instead of just playing along, because those are the rules that don't make any sense. Other questions on this? Elizabeth?
Thank you. One comment, and I, as far as having an evaluation component, if the two gentlemen in charge of this project would be looking at easements that this council have given, that may be a very nice evaluation component for us to have. And that, I don't know statutorily if that fits under anything. It's an evaluation tool of something that we have spent money on, and whether or not that suits the statute or not. But if some of the study that they did would be of particular easements that this council has funded, that might be one thing that may speak in the favor of doing some funding. The other thing is, when we look at the easements, and we've all been frustrated, and I can hear there's a lot of frustration here with easements, they are all over the map. And we really have a tough time being local. You know, I'm from one section of the state, and other people from other sections of the state. We really have a very difficult time being able to transport ourselves to another part of the state and saying, oh, yeah, that's a reasonable price for that easement. Or, gee, they really can accomplish what they say they're going to accomplish, because we know such and such, the farm down the road or Nature Conservancy or this or that has done exactly the same type of thing in the same type of ecoregion and same type of soil and on and on. We don't have that. We don't have any tool to be able to evaluate whether or not the proposer that comes in front of us can do the job. And when we do a fee title, well, we can say, well, okay, you know, if the DNR gets the fee title, or so-and-so, they're going to do this and that and this and that to it, it's going to cost so much, we can see the result. We really don't have any way to predict what we're spending on and if it's a reasonable amount. So I see some value in us having this as a tool, but I'm not sure that statutorily it's this fund is the right place to get the money from.
I'm hearing a trend here. I would just answer that, you know, we are approving easement programs based on a desire to keep from being developed and to allow for restoration of specific lands in specific geographies, using the conservation easement as a tool where fee acquisition doesn't make sense for one reason or another. And I think we do have a reasonable way of judging whether or not that's effective, because first, when they come in, do we like the habitat that they're trying to protect with easements? And second, do they actually then accomplish The acreage targets that they set up with the money that we give them is a way for us to judge whether or not we're spending our money well in terms of the easements. I think the rub for all of us is a valuation rub more than anything else. And you can always do better at are you doing the most important projects, but sometimes you just need to do projects. And, you know, set an area and get enough done there so that you're creating a block of habitat that's big enough that wildlife actually benefits from it. So, does anyone care to do anything with this request?
Thank you. This is Representative Hansen. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can, Rick.
I mean, I think the discussion has covered a wide range of issues, and I'm trying to think back of really what our authority is, and the authority is to make recommendations on appropriation. That's the council's authority. And the evaluation I've heard today, evaluating or comparing effectiveness, is the comparison on financial effectiveness in terms of cost. We call that the bang for the buck comparison between the easements or other tools. Occurred about scale and size and timing. And then talked about the conservation benefits. And I think it's, you know, when the council makes recommendations to the legislature on appropriation, we could make a recommendation regarding this on appropriation, whether this is a valuable thing, or if it can be part of, if there was a choice to put an appropriation in this bill that is coming up, that's a choice that the council could make. You know, we've had a legislative audit on conservation easements already. We've had a lot of hearings on conservation easements. I think we've had a lot of testimony on conservation easements. And the question of financial evaluation versus outcome evaluation, looking at are they achieving protecting, restoring, enhancing prairies, wetlands, forests, and fish game and wildlife habitat. Those are different questions. So there may be, the LPCMR has come to us asking us to partner on a recommendation for an appropriation. Is that correct? That's what's in front of us? Is that a request?
That is correct, Rick.
And that could be done, the council could choose to do that by including an appropriation within the bill we're going to be taking an act on, or it could be a letter of support, or it could be suggesting details within that request. I would just venture to say I think we've got a lot on the table here with this discussion, and it sounds to me that there's not support for putting something into the bill for an appropriation, but it seems that council members are wanting or are frustrated about where we are with easements and may need to, in our support of fleshing this out. Maybe that's a letter that goes to the LCCMR, a joint letter. Maybe this is a question for Susan on what really they want.
Susan, what do they want? What do you want?
Mr. Chair, I don't vote. Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen and members, the commission's motion that I'm relaying to you was a funding partnership for this initiative to move forward on this. And so I will go back to them with whatever message you care to relay either today or at another time. But it was, they felt it would be a good opportunity for a funding partnership.
Brian?
Thank you, David. I like Representative Hansen's idea because it was also mine.
You're just pretending.
He's not here. I'm claiming all of his good ideas. Susan, would you consider having some kind of a joint letter from your people, our people, to the legislature requesting this, you know, review of funding and how we pay for easements. And because I think this study is getting the cart before the horse, so because if we're ensnarled in this ridiculous funding mechanism, what you find out is almost who cares, because we're paying too much or just not working the way it should. And then maybe when we get that straightened out, we can better look at bang for the buck.
Mr. Chair, it may have been in the way I presented this. I think some of the issues raised here and issues raised within the commission are the same and similar. Maybe we've just expressed them a little bit differently. And my commission members are really looking for, if there are going to be changes made or for future funding analysis, that feeling like this, some of this upfront work, the information is needed and will be helpful. It gives you the background and the basis for going to others to ask for a change if you wish to do that. And I don't have any other authority than to relay the commission's motion to you. As I said, I think it would be nice to have, whether this opportunity or other opportunities for the council and commission, to work together on these items of mutual interest.
Bill? Mr. Chair, Susan, to understand, it's already in the bill going forward through LCCMR, is that correct, the 250?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingerbinson, yes, it's in the current adopted appropriations bill going forward to the 2015 legislature.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move it along. I would vote to deny the request, but also follow that up with a letter of support for their situation, their expenditure of the 250 for the study. Now, again, I probably should have asked, and maybe that's a bright question, is the 250 even going to do it? If you go back with this message, if this were to pass, if we were to deny this, are they going to be pulling it out of there, or are they going to go ahead with the $250,000 study?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingerbinson, I appreciate where you're coming from. Cash is always nice. But we, in discussions with the principals at the university, obviously the dollar amount available will, we could be larger in scope with additional dollars beyond the $250,000. Commission members felt, from their perspective, of their $5 million approximately $5 million investment, to spend a small percentage on past evaluation and future evaluation components was an important expenditure.
I think, just to follow up, what I read your request is about ecological benefits as well as valuation, and what I hear here is valuation. You know, we're all concerned that valuations and easements, specifically done with some state agencies, are not realistic. And if we're to do what Bill is suggesting, I think it would be good for us to spell that out. The ecological benefits of the easements, we've got people who say come in and protect this land because it's available for wildlife habitat, and I don't think anyone that I've heard today is questioning much about whether or not we're getting ecological benefit. The true issue is, any more than we are with any other property, when we add land to a WMA, is it ecologically benefiting the WMA? The real issue for us is, are we getting the bang for the buck we ought to be getting? And that's a message I think would be good to pass forward, if you're willing to agree to that in your motion, if I'm reading everyone right.
What you said.
would be fine with
since I'll have to sign a letter to this amendment, we'll make sure so. But I wanted to just clarify that, because I do think there's a distinct difference between whether or not we're actually protecting the land we say we're protecting and we're counting on people to protect, and whether or not it's effective use of state money within the state agency realm and what they're paying.
Mr. Chair, I think that's always at least been expected, and not expected, but always been the, not the charge, but the area that LCCMR has always somewhat dealt with, and that's the science and getting that type of information. And so I agree with that.
Okay.
But still would deny the funding here.
Bob, did you have something?
It looks like so.
I didn't want to. Any other discussion on this? I would just add that I think as we do our call for proposals, we ought to sort of identify this issue and how we handle evaluation as something that we ought to talk about before we do our call for proposals, because maybe it's time for us to clarify our expectations and call for proposals on this easement of easement valuation, instead of just whatever you bring us in terms of easements is what we'll agree to. So I'd like to just ask staff to bring that back to us for discussion before the next council does the request for proposals. If that's all right. Amanda, will you do the vote?
Mr. Chair, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Susan.
Let's start with Elizabeth Wilkins this time. Excuse me, I'd like to know what the...
You are voting to deny the funding request and send a letter supporting the idea of understanding easement valuation.
Thank you. Yes. Ron Schar?
Yes.
Senator Tom Sackhoff, absent. Scott Rawl, ineligible to vote on the phone. Sue Olson?
Yes.
Representative Denny McNamara, absent. Jane Kingston?
Yes.
Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Chairman Hartwell?
Yes.
Representative Rick Hansen?
No.
Jim Cox?
Yes.
Bob Anderson?
Yes. Motion passes. All right. Next is the Treasurer's Report on the forecast that was released last week, which, if you read carefully, did nothing but confuse you a little bit. And so handle this part of the discussion, and we have Michelle Mitchell here from MMB.
Yeah, we had $1 billion, which is great for the state. That's great. But what, by the time it's all factored out and all the funds that are spoken for, we had a meeting yesterday, Mark and Sandy and Amanda and Michelle Mitchell from MMB, and the part that we're looking at, you have in front of you with a 5% reserve. You know, you can look at different amounts of reserves, but I suggested that we just look at 5%. That's kind of been our target for the last 4 years. And unless anybody has a strong reason to look at a different percentage reserve, I would just go with what we've done in the past. And Michelle can flesh out all the details and tell us how much there might be changing between now and when we have to make the motion. We get another forecast in February, I think. Thank you. So you have your handouts in front of you.
Michelle?
Chair Hartwell, council members. My name is Michelle Mitchell. I'm the budget officer for the Environment and Natural Resources and the Upper Heritage Fund. Thank you for asking me to speak today. The fund statement in front of you is a draft of what I anticipate will the consolidated fund statement, which will be hopefully passed in our available in the next few weeks, will show. This is a snapshot in time. This is an update from the end of session. So the two documents, as Councilmember Kingston mentioned, there's a summary page, which I think the council is most interested in, which shows the amount available above the current recommendation, as well as a fund statement. And for those of you in the private sector, this is, you can think about this effectively as an income statement. It kind of shows your available resources and expenditures for a bottom line total. So I'll be focusing on the summary page. How it it's laid out is that I've provided 2 years of information, kind of your baseline, fiscal year 15, and then fiscal year 16. There are some funky numbers that I can walk through if you'd like, but given that they're, the bottom line is that the council has very little above and beyond the recommendation from your October 7th meeting available for appropriation. So the total amount being $162,000 above the October 7th recommendation of $999,993,000. In taking a quick peek at a future agenda item or agenda item that will be coming up shortly, it looks like there is a $15,000 difference. So actually that amount available to appropriate goes down to $147,000. So the primary changes from the end of session forecast is that there are some cancellations that happened in fiscal year 14 of $241,000. There are revised sales tax estimates here. If you take a look up at the top two boxes, there's the end of session box. The sales tax estimate for fiscal year 16 was roughly $101 million. Now in November, we're anticipating it'll be right around $100 million. So the 4.8 million carry forward number that you see at the top includes both the reserve as well as those cancellations. So the greatest potential for volatility in this forecast and what we may see changes in February is the sales tax figure. It could be higher or lower, which is why we at MMB recommend a 5-10% reserve. And as Ms. Kingston pointed out, we have chosen to show a 5% reserve to you today. So with that, I will open it up for any questions you may have.
So the summary is roughly $100,000 difference from what we've allocated in our work thus far, just to cut through the chase.
So you did a great job at estimating.
Better than the state.
No.
Any questions? Great. Thank you very much. Yes, sorry. Rick?
Rick and Matt. Just recommend, or I'm having a little hard time hearing, but recommend not doing anything $100,000 with the volatility economy. Wait until the February forecast. I think there is not allocated that on the state right now.
All right, so Rick recommends that we not do anything, which is agenda item 8.
Well, he took my idea, Ron. That's what I was going to say, so it's a good idea.
Is there anybody who wants to suggest that we do anything different than that? If not, let's move to agenda item 9, net revenue rider language. Mark?
Besides the memo, there's also an attachment here, which is an email. The one side of it is an email from Aaron Sandwich from Feathers Ferber. On the back side is some recommendations from Feathers Ferber. Basically, in 978.056, there is a... let me find it here. Actually, I think it's in 18? 16, real property interest. There's a request, or there's a delineation that when property is purchased by an organization, NGO, in this case Feathers Ferber, and they restore the land to desirable conditions, then they're ready to transfer to DNR, that upon transfer they have to do a report of the costs used or associated with restoring that property, the revenues that are generated by the property, and also the net revenues left over. The report is the extent of what's talked about in the law. It doesn't say what to do with those revenues left over. So Aaron had gotten hold of us and said, hey, I'm ready to do these reports, or we're getting real close. And by the way, he is here, I believe, today for a comment if anybody wishes to ask questions of him. But he said, you know, what do we do with the rest of the money? Because they had, in these restorations, they had some revenue off the property that wasn't all used in the restorations. And based on, as Aaron had mentioned, on the federal procedures, which they follow with our state dollars too, basically, those dollars, you know, you don't keep those dollars, they have to go somewhere. So he was looking for direction and in looking at the law, we have no direction. So that's why the subject came up today.
And staff recommendation for how to handle this is?
At the bottom of your memo, you see the potential suggested rider language. And this has been floated through both Greg and Janelle. They may have other additional comments on it. Basically on, I'm sorry, subdivision 8, under revenues, it would be adding parcel or B at the very bottom. The owner of the land shall submit the net revenues determined upon or determined under paragraph A, clause 3, to the state no later than X days after the land is transferred to the state. That's a recommendation for potential rider language. Pheasants Forever has actually, in their memo, a couple of different potentials that can be done. Their recommendations are, number one, the program income should be retained by the grantee for use on the expenses that would otherwise be eligible for grant reimbursement under the appropriation language and applicable grant standards, or the net program revenue remaining at the time that the final report is submitted should either be A, reduced from the final invoice, which would make sense as well, B, held in reserve account for future use on the program associated expenses, or C, returned to the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
Yeah. So the issue to summarize is that the current language leaves in question what happens to the profit, quote unquote, from a project when there are revenues related to that. And the proposed language on page 1 would make it clear it's returned to the council. The suggestions on the back page or page 4 are that there would be options for what that happens, which would include being returned to the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And the question to the council is, do you want to do anything? Jane?
There are various reasons why projects or programs might not use all the money that's been appropriated. We talked about the situation with PNC at the last meeting or the meeting before, where they ended up having lower direct support services costs than what they had projected, and what to do with that money that's extra or not spent money. I would just try to keep consistent with what we do with that money and do what is easiest and most expeditious for staff to stay consistent and be practical about, you know, what we do with that, regardless of the source, and if there's no statute that controls it. I think the difference in the TNC direct support services, I think there was some DNR regulations that kicked in, and that's why that's a different issue. And, you know, we can either do the same thing that we do with that, which I don't recommend, or just do whatever is the best for staff, whatever they recommend. Unless there's a statute.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me, if you've got profits in excess of what you expected on the project that are sitting there at the end of the project, the simplest is to return the excess money.
Right.
That's pretty simple. And so do we want to include that as the rider language, Mark?
One comment to remember, and this is just for further information, is that within each appropriation there may be multiple parcels. And as those parcels come up and are purchased, restored, and then transferred to DNR, there may still be additional parcels within that appropriation, in which case there may be other use for those dollars within the appropriation itself.
But that might not have been approved in the original accomplishment plan.
We're not talking.
Mr. Chair, is Mark Shepard in the room to give a legal opinion on whether we should have clarity through a statutory or session law correction? Legal counsel in the room?
Greg and Janelle are, but Mark is not.
Can we hear from Janelle or Greg?
Mr. Chair members, I think it would be helpful to have clarity if the council would want the funds
returned to the state. I think that would have to be in statute as proposed here. I think it's basically a policy decision of the council what they want to recommend to the legislature on how to handle these funds.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, this would be appropriate because we are making a recommendation relating to appropriation. Therefore, I would move it to include it.
As on page one and drafted by and approved by Janelle and Greg, that they return the funds. Is that what you're recommending?
I would move that, yes.
All right. Do you want to fill in the number of days? Because there's X's in the deal. What would be fair? 45 days? Is that going to raise problems?
I would ask for the nonpartisan staff recommendation.
We'll leave it up to nonpartisan staff to fill that in. In which case, they can ask and make sure we don't do something that causes some unintended consequence. Any other comments on this? Amanda, will you call the roll, please?
Bob Anderson.
Yes.
Jim Cox.
Yes.
Representative Rick Hansen.
Yes.
Chairman Hartwell.
Yes.
Senator Bill Igoritson.
Yes.
Jane Kingston.
Yes.
Representative Denny McNamara, absent. Sue Olson?
Yes.
Scott Rawl, ineligible to vote. On the phone, Senator Tom Saxhoff, absent. Ron Shara?
Yes.
Elizabeth Wilkins?
Yes.
Great. Motion passes. Number 10 on our list is the draft bill language. Heather, are you going to take this?
Mr. Chair, members of the council, before you is the draft bill, Dr. Harris' bill for Minnesota laws 2015. Many of these appropriations are similar to those in the past, so I won't read through them, but please consider this document a submittal for the record for this meeting. At the last meeting, the total appropriation was less than what you see here, and that is because we failed to add in $50,000 for the legacy website. So the new total is $100,008,000, inclusive of all of the recommendations. In the Prairie section, we have allocated or recommending for appropriation $40,948,000. There are several programs in here that deal with the Prairie region throughout the state, many of which are familiar to you. There are a couple of new programs that we have not funded before. The Prairie Chicken Habitat Partnership in Southern Red River Valley, as well as protecting and restoring Minnesota's important bird areas. I want to draw your attention to as well to the subdivision 2K, the Accelerated Prairie Restoration Enhancement on DNR lands, phase 7. I've been in conversation with DNR staff about additional language to include in the rider, and you'll see that underlined as the aquatic management areas to be included in those areas to be restored and enhanced. At the request of DNR, that language has been pulled out. So as the bill goes forward to the advisor's office, that phrase will not be included in there.
What's the reason for that?
The reason for the removal or the inclusion?
For the removal.
I would defer to DNR.
Can DNR answer that? I'm just curious.
I will note that the aquatic management areas were not included in the proposal nor in the accomplishment plan, and so that's what begged the question originally.
Okay, but that's fine then.
Yeah.
Thanks for that.
One other housekeeping note in this subdivision as well is that I revealed an inconsistency in the numbering of 2D, the Northern Tallgrass Prairie. It's listed here as number 6, but it actually should be number 5, so I will work with the revisers to make the necessary corrections because it kind of rolls back to previous session law. The next subdivision is Forests, and there's $14,822,000 allocated or recommended for appropriation in this section. Again, most of these programs will be familiar to you. A couple of new ones, just to remind you, the Mississippi Headwaters Habitat Partnership is new this year, as well as the Southeast Forest Habitat Enhancement Program.
Under wetlands subdivision, there's $20,390,000 in appropriation recommendations there. These are all programs that we have funded in the past and continue to do good work. Subdivision 5 is habitats, $22,368,000. Again, a couple of new programs, Lake Bemidji South Shore Restoration Enhancement Program, the Sand Hill River Fish Program, and the Lake Nokomis Integrated Habitat Enhancement Plan. I just realized, too, I failed to draw your attention to one other thing, and that is if you would go back to page 3, under 2J, the Wild Rice River Corridor Habitat Restoration Program, that came to you with a descriptor in front of wild rice. It was the lower wild rice habitat, the lower Wild Rice River Corridor Habitat Restoration Program. The lower wild rice is not a political name for the river, and so we've just reverted back to the Wild Rice River Corridor and allows them to do river work or acquisition work if necessary outside of that first phase area. Under 5H, the Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program, there are a number of changes that the council wished to see in this appropriation language, namely we combine the two appropriations and had the staff with the CPL program re-examine the personnel costs associated with those. Council also had discussion, I believe, at your last meeting regarding a date at which time any leftover Metro designated funds could be used for statewide program. I consulted with Representative McNamara, who decided that at his original suggestion, my conversation with him indicated that he would like to withdraw that and wait another year so we have a better understanding of what demand is for that program and make any necessary adjustments, both in terms of proposal, request, as well as an accomplishment plan and writer language for next session. Subdivision 6 is administration, $1.48 million. This includes funding for the council for 2 years. As well as the legacy website inclusion, which I believe was not discussed earlier. Under Subdivision 7, availability
of... Just to point out, you did mention 2 years. This is 2 years because this is the first year of the biennium, and it's been our practice to fund both years of administrative staff in the first year instead of splitting it into two.
Actually, it is split into two. It's the appropriation will come out of this year's funds, but it will be split over 2 years.
I stand corrected, but my point is that we're essentially covering the 2 years in one, and it's important because if the session wears on a long time in the second year, they're getting into layoff notices and all sorts of craziness if you don't do it this way.
Under Subdivision 7, there's an outstanding question that we'll need council agreement on. If you look at the highlighted area, if a project receives at least XXX of its funding from federal funds, the time period of appropriation is extended to equal the availability. This is an issue that was brought up a couple of council meetings ago regarding the level of federal funds you all feel necessary to keep an appropriation open. I queried a number of people in that discussion, reviewed the record and the testimony, and did not find a percentage per se. So the question before the council is what percentage would you like that federal match to be? That will need to be decided today before we send this up to the advisor's office. The only other change is two under Subdivision 9 under mapping. We've been working with the Department of Natural Resources over the last year to comply with the mapping requirement. And with mutual agreement, we have determined that those graphic information should come to the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council rather than the DNR. This information will be shared with DNR as well as the public at large as well. Under 10 is an appropriation recommendation from last year, which needed correction. We, in the writing of the rider language, we failed to include the phrase "and permanent conservation easements as an allowable purpose." This corrects that and also indicates the amount of money to be distributed to an easement monitoring fund. Then finally, the anticipated change in Subdivision 8 revenues. This is what has been previously discussed in an item right before this. Subdivision 20 on donations is also language that the council discussed. So this is new language we added to the statute. with an effective date of July 1st, 2016. And we also removed the language from the individual appropriations rider language and formed this new subdivision 21, which addresses the haying and grazing conditions on lands acquired with the Outdoor Heritage Fund. With that, I'll stand for questions.
Great. Are there questions for Heather on this? Jim?
Yeah, it's Heather. The dollar amount that is into the Legislative Coordinating Commission is $608,000 first year. How was that number arrived at?
This was my understanding is that this total.
Heather, can you get the mic so that they can?
Yes, I'm sorry. The members of the council. The two amounts were what was determined by the staff. This was a couple of months ago when Bill presented the administrative budget. So these are that total number broken out over 2 years per the request of the LCC. This allows them to carry any funds over from 1 year to the next, and as David indicated, also allows for a longer session, or if the council is dissolved, that there would be at least a year's worth of funding to wrap up operations.
And what items does that include? It includes, of course, salaries, but what other?
It includes all reimbursement expenses for council members, so all travel, all per diem, hotels, field trips. It includes all of the daily office supplies and equipment necessary to run the office, as well as provides funds for the online system for managing the appropriations and programs.
And what were the numbers we used last biennium debate?
I don't have that information with me.
Roughly
the same. There's not a great deal of increase.
Elizabeth, did you have a question?
Thank you for waking me up here.
It's my job.
I think we already talked about the reporting and all the reports, flush of reports and everything that came in on the ongoing programs, because we had a resolution that a definition as to what would happen if they were not current. So looking at all these ongoing programs, do the staff feel comfortable that the reporting requirements have been met adequately so that we can recommend them to the legislature?
Members of the council, Member Wilkins, as Mark indicated earlier, we did receive a number of final reports that were grossly overdue. Unfortunately, virtually every single one of those reports were inadequate, and mostly because of the failure to comply with the statute requirement around the notice of funding restrictions. We will not approve those filed reports until those notices have been filed appropriately and correctly. Managers are aware of that. They're going back and making those corrections. So until all of those documents come in, we will not be able to approve the plans. I'm not sure how long that will take. In some cases, it's a handful, and in some cases, it's like hundreds. There's a significant amount of money attached to it, and a failure of people to essentially read the law and understand it. So we've had a lot of discussion around that, and we're going to try to be more specific and more directive to future applicants that this is the law. This cannot be changed. You can't write your own language, those kinds of things, because it is a legal document. Beyond that, I think the reports are in fairly good shape, but we still have a significant backlog, and we continue to work with project managers to bring them up to speed and get those issues resolved.
Then my next question would be for David. As I recall, that the motion that was made last time, that would have been at the October meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Can you restate that for us as to what had to be done when?
I believe what we agreed was that we would not consider proposals from managers that did not have current reporting into us, and that applications for additional funding would not be considered by the council. So staff would just, you know, someone put in a proposal and someone didn't have the report done, we're not going to consider that for that year as a way of encouraging people to get their reports complete to our satisfaction before they apply for new money. Is that?
And wasn't there something about approving this particular document to be sent to the legislature? Wasn't there something, some criteria there that had to be met? I'm just asking because with that in mind, I want us to be following that criteria.
We actually talked about that and opted to go for next year's proposals because we didn't want to create a short notice that created problems. But Sandy, you had your hand up. Is my memory correct?
Oh, there would also be the option for the council not to approve the accomplishment plan and to hold back approval of the accomplishment plan until they had their other reports up to date. That's another option.
Your recollection is correct. We were concerned because it wasn't in the request for proposal that we're going to put in a new rule. So we would implement it next year and just hold back on accomplishment plans this year until they got their act together.
And I just wanted everybody to be clear, including myself, on what the criteria were as we move forward.
Good question.
Thank you.
Bob?
Mr. Chairman, with regard to Subdivision 21 on haying and grazing, and the last sentence, is that in keeping with the motion that was made at the last meeting in November with regard to the DNR being able to have written conservation plans that include haying and grazing?
I believe that's the intent. Conservation grazing under a management plan that is already being implemented may continue.
And the management plan and conservation plans are synonymous?
Yes. Would you like it to be slightly...
Well, I just look at the motion and I just want to be sure that we're saying the same thing.
This is, members of the council, Mr. Chairman, this is a language that we used in the writer language last year, and this was the directive to take that out and make a separate subdivision. This is language that was agreed to by the department last year.
If you wanted to say conservation or a conservation management plan, we can certainly add that. It would not be harmful to do that, I don't think.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is Representative Hansen. It actually might make things more difficult to say that. I mean, there's a benefit of saying that this rider is the same exact same thing that we passed last year. There's a benefit in saying it's the exact same thing as we passed. If we cannot say that, then that may lead to, again, hours of debate and discussion about, well, how is it different, et cetera. So sometimes if it's not a definitive difference, there may be a benefit in saying it's the exact same thing as what we passed last year.
You would know better than most of us, Rick. I would just say I think it's pretty clear that a management plan on conservation lands is also a conservation plan. So I think while the language may be a little different, the intent is clear. You've got to have a management plan that calls for conservation grazing.
Thank you.
Let's talk for just a moment about number 7, subdivision 7, the blank in terms of if a project receives blank of its funding from federal funds, the time period of the appropriation is extended. This is a result of the sort of surprise in the room over $2,500 holding an appropriation for a long period of time. And we had a discussion, but not a resolution, as to what that number would be. There was a discussion about 10%, but there was no conclusion. We need to decide what number we want to use. And so I'm opening the floor to suggestions, Ron.
Well, to me, the key word here is that provided the federal funding was confirmed. I guess if it's confirmed, why do we need to set a percentage as long as we know it's going to be there? If we just say if a project receives funding from federal funds, as long as it's guaranteed, am I missing something?
Yes.
Okay.
In the Elk River project,
yes,
which was a multi-million dollar acquisition, the appropriation was held open with $2,500 of federal money, and it felt like that wasn't quite what we wanted, what the intent was to have that, and it was the sense that it ought to be significant, not, you know, you could find a federal grant for $100 and hold open appropriation for a couple of years, which isn't what we're trying to get done. We want to get the project done. So that's the gist of our conversation, setting some threshold that's reasonable. We don't want to stop work, but we want it to be a legitimate contribution to the project, not something to just sort of find that funny loophole. Jane, did you have a suggestion?
Well, we talked about it last meeting, and I know that 10 came from Scott, if I remember correctly. And I think I said it should be a higher number, but, you know, I look at what the percentages are, you know, on projects that we get, and, you know, it's anywhere from 0 to 300%. And, you know, I don't want to make it overly complicated either. So, I don't know. This is kind of a swag, isn't it?
What's your swag?
Scientific wild ass guess, right? So I don't know.
15, that's in halfway between your 20 and Scott's 10.
Whatever the group thinks, I don't know. Go for it.
Sure?
Yes.
When available? I have a comment when appropriate.
You can make your appropriate comment right now.
I actually have been giving this some thought since our last meeting, and I think if we have, there's two things I would like to try to accomplish here today. One is a percentage. That percentage in my mind would be 15%, but I would also still like to add a sunset on there of a maximum of either 5 or 6 years. Because even if there is measurable federal funds available, I mean, if those federal funds are available for 10 years and we have 15% federal funds available for 10 years, that's still too long for this project to come to completion. And so I would like to make our language say that if you receive federal funds equaling 15% of the appropriation, that the funds can be held open for the duration of the federal funds availability to a maximum of 6 years.
6 years from the beginning? Or an additional six?
No, six total. So our availability appropriation, I believe, is 3 years. This would allow that to be opened for three more if there was measurable federal funds in the 15% category.
I'd like to hear from, if there's anyone here that gets this funds, what they think about that percentage and the time frame. Is Ms. Bowser here, or does anyone have an idea? Because these aren't scientifically, or numbers aren't scientifically arrived at. I think six is too long, Scott.
Well, it's already 3 years, Jay.
Yeah, I know.
So
I don't want to go more than 4 or 5.
Yeah, we have 5 years for restoration.
Five then.
How long did it take us? How long did we wait, Mr. Chair, on the Marsh Lake project on Lacaparo?
Oh, Scott. the chair does not remember, but you can probably help me because your memory is better than mine.
The reason I bring that up, that was a colossal project. I can tell you that if there's a project like that that has measurable federal funds attached to it, that project's worth waiting
a distance four. Now, maybe not six, maybe five, but to crash and burn a project like that because the federal funds or the project couldn't get completed, you know, in, say, three or four, we're already at five for restoration. We're really only extending that deadline by 1 year over our current deadline. And so I understand it's a long time, but some of those projects are truly monumental in scope. And, I mean, if the compromise is five, that's great. But the language we were using before didn't have any time commitment on it. It was, if you have 15% federal funds, we'll extend your appropriation as long as the federal funds are available. That had no end date on it. Even at 5 or 6 years, that's far better than what we were contemplating before. So if it takes 5 years to come to consensus, I would concur with that. I'm just saying we need to set a sunset date on it, even if federal funds are available.
I guess I'd be more comfortable saying something on the order of if it goes beyond what's in the appropriation language, you know, that it has to be a case-by-case basis. I'm uncomfortable attaching time limits on nebulous projects. I mean, you can look back at Marsh Lake and say that's a good example, and that's why we're talking about it, but I don't want to put limitations on any potential future project, longer or shorter, without having a case-by-case discussion.
I actually don't completely agree with you, because I think one of the things that certainly can happen is a project can come back and say, we intended to get it done in 4 years,
right,
but it's going to take longer, reappropriate the funds. You know, we don't want to walk away from it, but it's going to take another couple years, and that is a case-by-case discussion.
Okay.
Then, where it's really tough to establish sort of the criteria that the case-by-case discussion is going to take place by in 4 years.
Yeah, I can agree to that. I just don't want to have blanket rules that provide less flexibility should some, who knows what might come up.
I mean, 5 years for an acquisition is a long time.
It is. It is long. Six is even longer.
Heather?
I want the council to understand, too, that at least in the first 5 years of this program, the way in which the federal funds have been used only to keep an appropriation open because the work had not been completed. It wasn't because initially the project scope was so big that it took longer than the appropriation period. It was a way to spend down the appropriation. I think that's a real salient point that people need to understand, and I think it goes to the council's intent of making sure those federal funds are in hand at the beginning of the program so you understand what the implications are.
Sue?
I think a way to add in the flexibility that some of us are looking for is in that sentence, change the is that's in the second line to maybe. So it would read, if a project receives at least whatever percent of its funding from federal funds, the time period of the appropriation may be extended to equal the availability of federal funding, because then it'll come back to the council for approval and not just automatically be extended. The way it's written now, it's already going to happen whether we like it or not. And I think that gives us a little bit of control back and yet flexibility for when there's a good reason for it.
This is Representative Hansen calling from Washington. And I wouldn't do anything to put something of inaction here that would cause projects ultimately to not get done. I mean, I think you could have managers that are getting a project done, but there's a snafu with the funds from here, and unfortunately it appears that that is the standard operating procedure now. So I'm just cautious where we may try to control something that we cannot control that would have a consequence without any best intent. I understand the desire to get the project done, but I'm just a little nervous after spending, I mean, I spent the day on the Hill yesterday. Now I'm reading the bill, the giant bills that they're reading reports of the giant bills they're considering for keeping the government going. And, you know, this is very frustrating. And so we're able to do a lot right in Minnesota, and I would hope we can continue to get the project implemented. When we start talking about this percent leads to that percent leads to this year, 5 years from now, we could be, the council could be completely different and wonder what were we doing related to federal spending, which we don't have any say over. So I'm just cautious about going down this path. Also, I've just been informed I might be kicked out of my room here shortly, so I would, just to get the whole bill on the table, I would move the bill so it's in front of us, the recommendation to the legislature, then you can make amendments as needed.
All right, so we'll move this forward. We have a suggestion from Sue that the language be adjusted to maybe, and I heard a percentage of 15 suggested, and I'm not seeing any huge disputes to that. The open question, which we've heard from Rick and Scott on the phone, as to a specific deadline or not a specific deadline, and the maybe gives us the authority to say can be extended, but we don't have to agree. And Greg is not happy with us.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I'm a little concerned with a date set in law that the council then can override through an accomplishment plan without going through the law. I think that that authority may be difficult. I mean, I'm just not sure that that's a good option.
And so what would you recommend?
Well, I think there's some certainty about, so when the Department of Finance is looking at the books and making sure when things are still available, there has to be some certainty to them about what does that mean. Is it the date that's put in that you put in your law for when it's available, or if there's federal funding involved, then it may be extended, but what is that date it's extended to? I think it's important to get those in here, but I don't know that doing it in the accomplishment plan is necessarily a good option. I'm not sure that that would be proper.
So you are recommending a specific date, as Scott was suggesting?
Well, Mr. Chair, or you could keep it open, same as you have it now, federal funding, you know, or a specific date. I'm assuming M&B would probably like a specific date, if they'd like to know when to cut off their appropriations.
Should we say, just as a suggestion, a six-year maximum time frame as a date certain? Five. I'm seeing a lot of... So amend this so that it reflects a five-year maximum and a 15%. So Rick has made a motion. Rick, would you be acceptable for that motion to approve this as our recommendation to the legislature with those clarifications, which will get added in by Greg and Janelle based on the conversations we just had?
I would be more comfortable with six just because I'm out here and seeing what's going on. So I would just be more comfortable with six, and then I would not object.
So the motion will be for six. If anybody wants to make an amendment to that, we'll take the amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Scott.
Do we have, to clarify, there's a motion to add 6 years, make it 15%, and then pass the recommendations. Is that the motion?
Yes.
Do we have one more amount that needs to be put in, the number of days when leftover appropriation has to be returned before we can vote on the whole package?
I think we left that decision to staff to fill in that blank for us based on...
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure that we didn't have to come back because we had one more thing yet to do.
No, we passed that and said staff would fill in the blank.
Thank you.
Any other comments on our package?
Chairman, point of order, is it understood that commission members can ask for a division on any item in the...
I assume so.
And I would ask for a division on subdivision 3A. Would it vote be held on that?
Okay. 3A is protecting forest, wildlife habitat, and wild rice river watershed. Do you want to say a word or just want a separate vote?
Well, here again, I think we've seen that we're going to have another set of regulations here that are different from what most, well, what all of our hunters would know, and possibly fishermen also. And so I'm concerned that we have more and more regulations that folks are unaware of, and I don't know that they're communicated as well as they are with the DNR regulations. And so I'm concerned that that we not do these kind of projects unless we have the same uniformity of regulations that the DNR has.
Okay. So, Greg and Janelle, just so I do this correctly, we take a vote on passing this 3A first, and then depending on what that what happens there, then on the whole bill. Does that keep me legal here?
Chair, this is kind of a new twist, and I'm just kind of thinking off the top of my head about how to handle something like this, because, you know, the entire package needs a 9-vote majority. It needs 9 of the 12. If you're just voting on a portion of it, does that mean that needs a 9-vote majority? You know, if you're splitting it up in the package, I'm not sure that that makes sense to require a 9-vote majority for the portion that you're splitting out or separating. And so I...
Well, it required a 9-vote to include it all as written, right? Last time.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is the 9-vote is only for the entire package. It's not an individual item. And so by doing this motion, though, I want to make sure that you're not requiring 9 votes for that individual item by splitting it out like that. And that's kind of what I feel like it's kind of a little bit of a trap there, that inadvertent, but just that. So I think the proper motion would be to vote to take it out rather than division. So yeah, I think that the members are allowed the division, and I think that's all proper. The question is what do you do with the individual vote on that project? And I think one way to look at it might be to require a 9-vote for the balance, 9-vote majority, but only require a majority vote on that individual item. Because otherwise you're kind of getting things kind of turned around a little bit.
Well, I would think that the proper way to handle this is probably, Bob, if you want to make a motion to exclude that from the bill, that would be the easiest way to accomplish based on what Greg just said to me. But it's up to you, and I'll figure it out.
I thought I heard Greg say that we had the right to division.
You have the right to division. And like I said, the other option I've offered is that treating that individual vote on 3A as a very simple majority and not as a 9-vote vote?
Treating it, tell me what I have to do, please. Don't tell me what I might do, because I want to do it right and I'm not sure what to do.
Well, the thing is you need a supermajority for the final package, and that's why I'm trying to think of how this fits in and works. And so my thought is that you would treat the package, the balance of the package, as a supermajority, but you would treat 3A as a simple majority on the vote as to whether it's in or out.
Sue?
Sorry, I'm kind of trying to hold my temper. The entire council has discussed the Indian tribe proposals over and over. And Bob, I'm shocked that you would try this end run on a day when we only have 9 members available to vote. If 3A is removed from the bill, I will not vote approval, and this bill will not pass today.
It seems most fair if we go back to the process on, you know, when we put each individual one in to the package, we made our suggestions, and it was a simple majority, yay or nay, whether or not our allocation would be added to that particular item. If I remember correctly, most of that allocation came from Susan, and I remember that we did pass that. So if we were going to renege on that, it seems like it should be the same process, that we use that simple majority again. I don't think it would be fair to go from the simple majority that put it in there and say, well, now we're going to have a supermajority to take it out. It's to me, it seems like it's in there, period, unless we revisit what we did before.
I don't understand division well enough to know exactly how to handle this. You know, we have a request for division, and I'm trying to figure out how to honor that. And I don't understand the rules well enough. What do I do, Greg or Janelle, with that request?
Well, Mr. Chair, you have to honor the request for a division because all members have to be able to divide on questions that they don't approve of in any motion. But what you do is you allow the division. You've got 2 motions. You've got subdivision 3A, and then you've got the balance of the recommendations. The practice in the Senate, and I think the House does this, but I'm not positive. The practice in the Senate is that you allow the person making the original motion to decide which one is voted on first. So Representative Hansen, making the motion, would decide if he wants you to vote on 3A first or the balance of the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
This is Representative Hansen, and I find this a really sad moment. The council voted to approve the package. Our past practice has been that we would approve the language based on that vote. That is what is in front of us. We have yet again another effort on the same topic, and I think it's really unfortunate, and therefore I withdraw the motion to approve the package.
Okay. So we have no motion to approve the package. So the division is irrelevant at this point. What?
Mr. Chair, it's off the table.
It's off the table. I just wanted to be clear on that. So I think, just to summarize where we're at, we have Bob's desire to strip this out of the bill, and we have a lot of people who want to see it in the bill. I don't know how many of where, but we need 9 votes today. And unless someone gives up, we're going to get out of here without a recommendation. Jane?
Can I make a motion?
You certainly can.
I would like to make a motion to pass it as written, except with the adjustments made in Subdivision 7 regarding the project, regarding the funding from federal funds and the total number of days to submit the net revenues and keep everything else intact. And I'd like to vote on it as a package as it was presented when we came in and has been sitting here for 2 months.
Okay. I have that motion on the floor. Is there any discussion on that motion?
Again, division, Mr. Chairman. I want to be able to go on record on that one issue, and I would accept the council's a recommendation that it be a simple majority vote on whether to include subdivision 3A.
Okay, so we're being asked, I'm just procedurally trying to make sure I get this right. You're making essentially not a division as much as a motion to strip out 3A as an amendment from Jane's motion.
Right. I'll accept that.
Okay. Which is a majority vote question. Am I right so far, Greg? Thank you. Any discussion?
How many people could vote on that right now? What do we have?
Nine.
One, two, three, Rick, Jim, David, Bob, Bill, and me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nine.
Okay.
Roll call, please.
There has to be because Rick is on the phone.
Thank you.
Scott, or Ron?
Me?
I like your hat so much.
Huh? You have a hat on? Yeah. Well, here is the issue. I would not vote to take that project out. But here is the issue that we haven't really confronted very well. And that is one little sentence in their proposal to not allow any wolf hunting on land that we are acquiring for them. And the other thing we haven't really addressed is looked at is what kind of hunting regulations do they allow for the White Earth Band compared to what would be allowed for non-band members. And some of you might be shocked at what that result looks like, which would raise questions about equal access to the hunting, the game, etc., in these lands that we are buying for the band. And I think these are legitimate questions and legitimate concerns. It was always my understanding if when we bought hunting land, it doesn't matter who, that tribal members would be governed by tribal members and non-tribal members would be governed by the Department of Natural Resources. Almost everything in our hunting laws is based on that. But now we come along, and this is the second project where they said, we want you to help us buy this hunting land. It's going to be open for non-band members, but they can't hunt any wolves because we don't want them to. And I, my own research is this is not uniform in tribes across America in regard to their attitude towards a wolf. So this is local here. It might still be valid. But I think this is thin ice if it keeps going like that. Now, that has nothing to do, what I just said, has nothing to do with the value of the project itself. I would vote for that. But there is that sentence that's been a craw in my chest for a long time as well.
Okay. Other comments?
Mr. Chair, it's Representative Hansen. Just clarifying that a yes vote, would that remove that section?
That is correct.
And a no vote would leave the bill intact.
That's correct. Because the motion was to strip it out. So a vote in favor would be a yes vote to strip out 3A. Ron?
Mr. Chair, is it possible within our realm to add a sentence to 3A that says that basically says hunting regulations, all of them for all game species will be divided, that band members will abide by the band laws and non-band members will abide by DNR rules. Can we add that stipulation?
No. According to Heather shaking her head, I don't know. Greg?
Mr. Chair, you've been managing access for hunting in the accomplishment plan. Now we've got one different thing. Oh, you've got a general law. You've managed it in the accomplishment plan, and the commissioner can restrict access during certain times, things like that, based on the accomplishment plan. It's a bit different than put it in the law. I don't know. It would go back accurate to what you've been doing. The place to do that is in the accomplishment plan, it seems to me.
Okay. Bill?
Mr. Chair, I know this has been going on long and long forever, and I think everyone knows how I feel about this. I echo the comments of Ron Scherer, and I also want to just make comments about when this is done, the taxation. Yes, and I have talked with folks from the reservation representatives, I think, that may be in the room, and it's very clear that they do pay sales tax. They should have say in what's going through here, but it doesn't necessarily have to pertain to them, taxation. And I think somebody made that clear in one of our other meetings. So that, as well as the idea that we can't, that I'm going to go out there and tell my sportsmen and women out there that they can hunt except up to that boundary with land that's been purchased with their dollars, is very troublesome. And Ron's right, it's very troublesome. But it has happened already. I think the process has been vetted. We've moved this far with the bill. I guess I'm going to have to vote against my friend Mr. Anderson on this, but with a lot of reservations. A lot of reservations.
Amanda, will you call the roll? The vote yes is to remove it from the bill.
I will start at the top. Bob Anderson.
Yes.
Jim Cox.
Yes.
Representative Rick Hansen?
No.
Chairman Hartwell?
No.
Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen?
No.
Jane Kingston?
No.
Representative Benny McNamara, absent. Sue Olson?
No.
Scott Rawl, ineligible to vote. Senator Tom Saxhog, absent. Ron Schar?
No.
Elizabeth Wilkins?
No.
Motion fails. Any other comments on the bill itself? If not, will you call the roll, Amanda, on the motion to pass the bill with the changes that we talked in?
Bob Anderson.
Yes, with reservations.
Jim Cox.
Yes.
Representative Rick Hansen.
Yes.
Chairman Hartwell.
Yes.
Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen.
Yes.
Jane Kingston.
Yes.
Representative McNamara, absent. Sue Olson.
Yes.
Scott Rawl, ineligible to vote. Senator Tom Saxhog, absent. Ron Schar.
Yes.
Elizabeth Wilkins.
Yes.
Members, we have 9 votes, which is the supermajority required to pass this through to the legislature. Thank you all for your hard work to get it to this point. Thank staff very much for their work to get us through a process and to get a bill in front of us in good shape. I appreciate it all. Are there any public comments? Anything anyone wants to add?
If this is my last meeting, I'd like to say thank you for the great opportunity and the honor of serving.
We hope it's not. If not, we're adjourned. Thank you all very much.